Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Douglas Daniels, a freelance journalist and former staff reporter for Campaigns and Elections. He is the author of the forthcoming memoir, Sifting Through the Wreckage, and he has an article at the Washington Spectator for Unprecedented Gridlock, Do Not Blame Democrats. Welcome to Background Briefing, Douglas Daniels.
Thanks for having me.
And it's true that our press convention is such that the mainstream media do not assign blame. It's always on the one hand, and on the other hand, the Democrats do something bad. I'm getting an echo here. Sorry. What's going on? Okay, well, let's continue and hope it doesn't come. Are you not on speakerphone, are you?
No. Oh, okay.
All right. Well, I'll just pick up where, because I was hearing an echo. The Democrats and the Republicans are equally blamed, and that happened, of course, when the Republicans threatened the full faith and credit of the United States government by their blackmail over the debt ceiling. That was basically portrayed as equal. The mainstream media assigned equal blame there, when it was clearly the Republicans alone that were behaving recklessly. In an unprecedented manner. So is that why they've gotten away with this for so long? I mean, this filibuster?
I think that's a large part of it. There's definitely been a frustrating pattern, as you point out, with the mainstream media presents not just situations like the one you just pointed out, but just in the overall legislative process, whenever there is any sort of defeat for the Democrats, it's presented as as just the common process in the Senate, when it really should be presented as obstructionism. And I think a lot of voters out there don't realize that the filibuster is not in the Constitution. It's just an obscure rule that was implemented later on. And the original intent of it was really to slow down the legislative process in extreme cases where the majority party was trying to ram through a law. And the whole idea of it was to require more debate and more deliberations. The senators were actually required to speak on the floor, whereas today they can just threaten a filibuster. They don't even have to be present. And if the majority party doesn't have 60 votes to overcome it, then a nomination or a bill or whatever is presented in the Senate can just sort of slip into this legislative purgatory or die altogether. And I think that the mainstream press has been too accepting of this what I would call abuse of a privilege, not a constitutional right or anything that the framers would have ever expected. And painted the picture to most of the country, I think, of just a Congress that is dysfunctional on both sides, sort of a pox on both houses situation. When you really look at the statistics and really look at the record, especially over the past 4 or 5 years, one party has been really far more to blame for the gridlock in D.C.
Well, specifically, in Obama's first year in office, Republicans broke a record of 67 filibusters, which are twice as many as the entire 20-year period between 1950 and 1970. And then now that we're into Obama's second term, but it's just in the 2 years I'm just quoting actually from your article here, in less than 2 years into Obama's first term, more than 400 pieces of legislation that had passed the House, many bipartisan bills were unable to garner the 60 vote, which is the new threshold that the Republicans have arbitrarily decided on. So the record's pretty clear that this is not just for blocking some particular piece of legislation that a majority party is ramming through. They're blocking everything, just about.
Right, and that's what's so stunning when you really go dig beneath the surface here and start looking at some of those statistics. I mean, certainly this isn't to suggest that the Democrats were saints when it comes to use of the filibuster during the Bush years. They certainly filibustered some of his judicial nominations, for example. But they really went into overdrive in 2009 when President Obama took office. And it has become so routine now that it's just accepted that 60 votes are needed to pass virtually anything in the Senate, even when it comes to things that have historically been considered completely routine. And even if it comes to pieces of legislation that enjoy broad public support, I would point to the example of the recent gun background check bill, which about 90% of the country supported, which had at least 54 senators in support of it, and it couldn't even get a vote, an up or down vote in the Senate, because the Republicans were able to exploit the filibuster rule and block it. And that wasn't really presented as an extreme example of obstruction on behalf of the Republicans in the Senate. It was just presented as this pathetic lack of leadership and failure from the White House and from gun control advocacy groups. And so I think that our coverage of the legislative process and the gridlock is a bit off, and I think that some of the language we use, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the nuclear option term that is used to describe basically suspending the rules of the 60-vote threshold and just using majority rule. It seems stunning to me that the idea of majority rule would be described as the nuclear option.
Again, I'm speaking with Douglas Daniels, a freelance journalist and former staff reporter for Campaigns and Elections. He's the author of the forthcoming memoir, Sifting Through the Wreckage, and has an article at the Washington Spectator for Unprecedented Gridlock, Do Not Blame Democrats. Now, I think a lot of people probably blame the Democrats. This is a country in which there's a famous adage that nice guys finish last. And the fact that they have been so feckless and almost masochistic in taking this punishment for so long, when a lot of the younger Democratic senators have been arguing to Harry Reid to do something about it, and you're quite correct to suggest that when they call it the nuclear option, they make it sound drastic, when in fact it would be only returning to the way business has been done in this republic for over 200 years. But nevertheless, don't you think that there are some real questions out there about, why has it taken so long? Finally, it looks like the White House is testing the resolve of the Senate by putting these three judicial nominations out at once for the D.C. Court of Appeals, which, twice a very good candidate has been blocked. Believe it or not, the minority chair of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Grassley, the Republican, has been arguing that putting these nominations forth is stacking the court, packing the court, referring back to FDR. For God's sake, the court has been packed by Republicans since 2005. I mean, it's a joke that they haven't been able to get. There've been five vacancies on that court, for God's sake.
Right. Well, he wants to. Grassley is suggesting they just eliminate three of the positions on the court so they can. I mean, this is all part of a broader scheme to block President Obama's agenda at any turn. But to get back to your original point, sort of where is the leadership in or the outrage from the Democratic side in the Senate or from the White House? Yeah, I think that, look, Harry Reid has really never been a big champion for filibuster reform. He's been openly skeptical about getting rid of the 60 vote threshold. I think that with these three judicial nominees, I think that that will prompt some further, more substantive reform this summer at some point. I think that we'll at least see the elimination of the 60-vote threshold when it comes to judicial nominations and to other executive branch nominations. I don't think that anytime soon we're going to see that 60-vote rule change when it comes to basic legislation. And that's going to be very frustrating for a lot of people who want to see a more efficient Senate.
Well, but why would the Republicans change? I mean, they've been hostile to this president, and they've been getting away with it. Maybe they'll just accept those three nominations and go back to business as usual. I mean, the three just...
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say go ahead, because it seems to me that's all they have to do is accept the three nominations, and then there's no follow-on threat, is there not?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. I think that from reports I've seen, it sounds like Harry Reid has been talking to the White House about, I think, regardless of what happens with these three nominations, of suspending the rules that would ordinarily require, I guess, 67 votes to make a rule change in the Senate, and actually, I hate to use the nuclear option phrase, but I think that they may well employ the nuclear option and switch the Senate rules, at least, like I said, for judicial nominees and for other presidential appointees. So we'll see, but you're right. There's really no incentive for the Republicans to change their behavior. They've been getting away with it for the last 5 years or so, and it's been serving them quite well.
So is Reid right, though, in being concerned about the shoe being on the other foot? In other words, if you suspend, if you get rid of the filibuster altogether, that would mean that if the Republicans got the majority in the Senate in 2014, and numerically they're at a tremendous advantage because there are an awful lot of Democratic Senate seats up and not too many Republicans, is that his concern, that when the shoe's on the other foot, the Democrats will rue the day that they got rid of the filibuster?
That's exactly right. I think that's exactly right. And I guess my point, the point I would make is I feel like that's short-sighted. I mean, I think that at a certain point you have to look at it on a broader scale and just say, look, this is a process that has spiraled so far out of control, it has been so abused by the Republican Party that it is now, I don't think it's an exaggeration to suggest that it is undermining basically the core principle of American government and majority rule. And, you know, obviously whoever is in the minority is going to want the filibuster power. But is it really good for the country? Are we really seeing legislative progress? And so I think that is really behind his, the reservations he's expressing. I think that's why he's trying to come up with a compromise where you can still, if you're in the minority block, legislation. I don't think that's a very strong, long-term, principled argument. I think it's very short-sighted and political. But
well, but Harry Reid did have it come up with a compromise a while back when some of the younger senators, like Jeff Merkley and others, were pushing through the so-called nuclear option. He met with Mitch McConnell and they came up with a compromise, and then no sooner had the ink dry on that deal, McConnell filibustered that judicial nomination of the woman that's been up twice now. They shot her down twice.
Right, and I think that I think one of the great problems with that, with what they were working on back at the beginning of this year, was it's really sort of nibbling around the edges, and it still preserved primarily that this 60 vote threshold, and that is that's the meat of what with the reform, any substantive reform has to have moving forward. And so, you know, as long as one senator can just say, I'm going to filibuster something, and he doesn't even have to be present, you're just not going to see much legislative progress, I don't think.
And that one senator, the Oklahoma Republican, that one senator,
yeah,
Oklahoma
Tom
Republican,
Coburn.
Tom Coburn, he's blocked hundreds of bills. I mean, it's extraordinary.
He's either blocked or delayed hundreds of bills. He's really an extreme fiscal conservative, and any type of legislation that he believes isn't a wise use of taxpayer money. He has employed all sorts of sort of arcane Senate procedure to delay or block legislation, and a large number of these bills would have passed easily with simple majority in the Senate. And so that's quite blessing.
Well, but what's the cumulative effect of all of this, you know, on the American people? We started out, Douglas Daniels, talking about how the press, the mainstream media frames this as a he said, she said argument, so they don't assign blame necessarily where it belongs. They blame both sides. And this leads to a kind of public apathy and a dismissal of the Washington business as usual, et cetera. This is unusual. This is a different time. I mean, I've talked to people who've been around Washington for decades, and they said they've never seen anything like the dysfunction that's going on now. And it came in with the Tea Party, and it's an entirely because of Republican radicals and because of their obsessive hatred of this president, Obama, that they are the ones that have changed Washington, changed the rules, and frankly, they're getting away with it. So why doesn't the White House and the Democrats make that the issue in 2014? I mean, otherwise, it's the public are just going to basically shrug it off as, you know, Washington dysfunction without recognizing the real cause of Washington's dysfunction. Somebody's got to make the case.
You're right. Look, I think that they need to. I think the White House and Democrats need to make the distinction between past dysfunction or gridlock, which we've been hearing about for generations in Washington. Those complaints are nothing new. But you're right. This is really at a different level. I think that the Republican Party used to represent or claim to represent small government or smaller government or less government. They really seem to represent now no government. The Tea Party Republicans who came in a couple of years ago really don't appear to be interested in governing or in legislating. They're really all about paralyzing government as much as possible. I mean, you're seeing that if there are agencies or areas of government they happen to not agree with, then they will stall nominations and leadership, key leadership positions for these agencies so they can't function perfectly. And then as I assert in my article, I think this is really just a self-fulfilling prophecy where a lot of these Tea Party Republicans, they campaign on how inefficient and ineffective government is. And then they go and gum up the works and make sure that government can't possibly work efficiently. And I think that the White House and the Democrats really need to make voters aware of how obstructionist this Republican Party is. This isn't about small government anymore. It's really about drowning government in the bathtub, as conservatives like Grover Norquist have said they want to do.
Well, ironically, Douglas Daniels, the most trenchant critics of this dysfunction that's going on are, in fact, Republicans, like former Senator Bob Dole, who recently said that the Republican Party today should put up a sign, close for repairs. That was reiterated by Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine, who just quit the Senate in disgust. You got people like Bob Dole and Olympia Snowe, Republicans, saying that Republican Party has lost its mind and gone, you know, it's not your father's or grandfather's party anymore. And yet the Democrats aren't saying anything. That's what I find extraordinary.
Yeah, it's really, it is frustrating. I guess I'm not quite, I wouldn't be quite as critical or as pessimistic. I mean, I do think that we have seen the last two cycles a lot of really extreme Senate candidates nominated, for example, in some pretty red states who did not win. And I think that the message has been getting out there that the Republican Party today is too extreme. I saw a Gallup poll recently that showed that a clear majority of voters believe that the party is too extreme. And so I think that message is out there, but the Democrats, in my view, need to really hammer that home a lot more and just make sure that if voters are frustrated with the obstructionism and the morass in Congress, it's really far more the blame should land on the Republican Party.
Well, a lot of the extremists like Murdoch and others didn't make it because of the bizarre things that they said in the last election. But Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, not only did they get elected, they're trying to be the standard bearers for the Republican Party and move it in a different direction. So it sort of feels like one side's got a strategy. And it may be incredibly reckless and dangerous for the United States, but somebody's got to step up and call these people out. I mean, you can't just rely on them shooting themselves in the foot.
Right. No, I think it's right. I mean, I think that figures like Ted Cruz, for example, are very self-destructive. I think both his own career and to his party more generally. I mean, I don't think that long-term characters like that are really going to help the Republican Party appeal to a broader base of voters, which we saw in 2012 is desperately needed if they want to actually compete on the national stage again, certainly in presidential elections. I sympathize with your criticism. The Democrats do, there's a passivity that I see that seems to be coming out of the White House and from a lot of congressional Democrats, where they're sort of sitting back and just always trying to respond, and they're not really leaning forward and being as proactive as they could be and aggressive as they could be.
And of course, now there's going to be one more Republican in the Senate with the loss of Frank Lautenberg, you know.
That's right.
So
it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, Christie's a Republican, so he's likely to he has the prerogative of appointing a Republican, doesn't he?
Well, of course, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the general election next year.
Sure. Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Douglas Daniels.
Thanks so much. It's my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Douglas Daniels, who's a freelance journalist and former staff reporter for Campaigns and Elections. He's the author of the forthcoming memoir, Sifting Through the Wreckage, and he has an article at the Washington Spectator for Unprecedented Gridlock, Do Not Blame Democrats. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared by